the clod. Presently came running a man in a cap with a neck shield. He suddenly stopped short. It was Laban, Bethuel's son. On such occasions he always came running. Had done so a few decades, a swift generation ago, when he had found Eliezer the wooer with his 10 camels and his train at the well, and said to him, "Come in, thou blessed of the Lord." But now, a graybeard, he ran again, Rachel having told him that Jacob was here from Beersheba. No servant, but the grandson of Abram, his sister's son. But if he stood still and let the other come to him, that was because he had seen no gold clasp on Rachel's forehead, nor any bracelets such as Rebekah had had, and because he saw that the stranger came not at the head of a well-furnished caravan, but obviously quite alone, mounted on a lean and mangy beast. Therefore he would make no concessions nor go too far to meet the supposed nephew, but remained standing with his arms folded, full of mistrust, as Jacob approached. Jacob but too well understood, ashamed and embarrassed as he was by the evil conscience of his poverty and need. Ah, he came not as a rich ambassador, delighting the household with costly presents from his saddlebags, and urged to stop one day or 10. A fugitive and houseless man he came, with empty hands, sent away from home, begging for shelter. He had good reason for a humble bearing. But he recognized his man at once, and knew what stripe it was who stood before him, and that it would not do to humble himself too much. Therefore he made no especial haste to dismount from his beast, but advanced towards Laban with all the dignity of his seed, greeting him with propriety, and saying, "My father and brother, Rebekah thy sister hath sent me to tell thee she hath bid me to live a while under thy roof. I greet thee in her name, and in the name of Yitzhak, her lord and mine, further in the name of our common forefathers, and I call upon Abram's God to protect the health of thee, thy wife, and thy children." "And thee likewise," said Laban, having understood the drift of Jacob's words. "And art thou then in truth Rebekah's son?" "Truly am I," the other answered. "Yitzhak's firstborn am I, thou sayest it, and I recommend to thee not to be misled by my lack of attendance nor my clothing, rotted by the sun. My lips shall explain all these things to thee at a fitting time, and thou shalt see that if I have nothing save that which is all important, at the least I have that. And that if thou callest me blessed of the Lord, thou choosest thy words aright." "Then I embrace thee," said Laban dourly, after Jerubbaal the shepherd had translated all this into their umu-umu speech. He laid his arms across Jacob's shoulders, bent first right and then left, and kissed the air on either side. Jacob's immediate impressions of this uncle of his were most equivocal. He had a couple of bad lines between the eyes, and one of the eyes was almost shut and blinked, though at the same time he seemed to see more with it than with the other. And on that side there was a distinctly underworldly twist to the mouth, a paralytic droop of the corner under the grizzled beard, which looked like a sour smile, and affected Jacob with misgiving. Laban was stout, with gray hair that stuck out behind under the neck shield. He wore a knee-length smock with a knife and a whip thrust into the girdle, and narrow sleeves that left free the sinewy forearms, covered with grizzled hair like his muscular thighs and wide, moist hands. They were the hands of a having man, Jacob saw, whose thoughts ran in the dark and narrow circle of earthly possessions. A perfect clod. Yet in the face, this uncle might almost have been good-looking, with heavy, well-marked brows that were still quite black, a strong, thick nose making one line with the forehead, and full lips showing in his beard. Rachel had her eyes from him, as Jacob noted with the mingled recognition, emotion, and jealousy with which one traces the earthly source and natural history of traits possessed by a beloved being. The knowledge is agreeable, insofar as it gives us a sense of penetrating the mysteries and discovering the intimate origins of something we love. Yet, in another way, it is unpleasant, and our feeling towards the immediate predecessor and ancestor of such traits is a curious mixture of awe and disgust. Laban said, "Welcome, then, and follow me, stranger, since thou sayest, and I am fain to believe, that thou art my nephew. In the past we had room for Eliezer, straw and fodder for his 10 camels, and that shall we also have for thee and thy one beast, for more thou seemest not to have. Gifts hath thy mother not sent, then? Gold, garments, spices, or the like? Verily she did, and in abundance, be assured, answered Jacob. That I have none of these things now shall be explained when I have washed my feet and had somewhat to eat. He deliberately took a high tone to sustain his dignity before the clod, and the latter marveled at the combination of so much poverty with so much pride. They spoke no more till they reached Laban's farm, where the strange shepherds left them to go on towards the town, while Jacob helped the master to fold the sheep in mud pens that had wattles on top as a protection against beasts of prey. Three women were watching them from the housetop, one of them Rachel, the others Laban's wife and elder daughter Leah, who squinted. The house, and indeed the whole steading, for besides the dwelling houses there were other reed huts and storehouses shaped like beehives, made a marked impression upon Jacob the tent-dweller. But he had seen in the towns he had passed through much finer houses, and was not minded to betray any admiration. Indeed, he began carping at once, had a word of contempt for the wooden ladder which led up to the roof outside, and said they ought to build a brick stair. Also, the whole house ought to be whitewashed, and lattices put on the ground-floor windows. "There is a stair up from the court," Laban said. "My house is good enough for me." "Say not so," answered Jacob. "If man be easily content, so is God for him, and withdraweth the hand of blessing. How many sheep hath my uncle?"
80, replied his host.
"And goats?"
"Some 30."
"No oxen?"
Laban made an irritated gesture with his beard in the direction of one of the mud and straw huts, indicating the cattle stalls, but gave no figures.
"There must be more," said Jacob. "More of every kind of beast."
Laban flung him a sour glance, but behind the sourness was lively speculation. They turned towards the house. The evening meal. Several poplar trees overtopped the dwelling-place, one of them barked down its whole length by lightning. The house was a rude structure of modest dimensions, built of crumbling clay bricks, but the airiness of the upper part gave it a certain architectural charm, for the roof rested only at the corners and in the middle of the sides upon masonry, and for the rest upon wooden pillars. The top was covered with earth, and provided with several little straw huts. The picture would be clearer if I spoke of a cluster of roofs, for the whole house formed a square surrounding a small court in the center. A few steps of trodden clay led up to the palm-wood door. Two or three domestic slaves were working in the court as uncle and nephew crossed it, a potter and a baker who was slapping his barley dough at the outer wall of his little oven. A maid in a loincloth was fetching water from the nearest watercourse, called the Bell Canal, which in its turn flowed from another, the Aliel Canal. Laban watered his unhedged barley and sesame fields from the Bell Canal. It belonged to a merchant in the town, who had had it dug and charged an oppressive tribute of oil, corn, and wine for its use. Beyond the ploughed fields, the open country rolled away to the horizon, on which rose the terraced tower of the Moon Temple of Haran. The women had come down from the roof and awaited their guests in the anteroom, which one entered through the house door. A great mortar for grinding corn was fixed in the center of its clay floor. Adina, Laban's wife, was an insignificant-looking matron, with a headcloth hanging down over the close-fitting cap that covered her hair, a necklace of gaily colored stones, and a facial expression which was like her husband's in its joylessness, save that the look round the mouth was less sour than bitter. She had no sons, a fact that perhaps went far to explain Laban's gloom. Jacob later learned that they had had a son early in their married life and sacrificed him when the house was built, burying him alive in an earthen jar with lamps and basins in the foundations of the building, by way of invoking the blessings of prosperity upon the house and farm. But the sacrifice had brought no particular benefit, and thereafter Adina had not proved capable of bearing sons. As for Leah, She was certainly not less well-built. In fact, she was larger and more imposing than Rachel. As for Leah, she was certainly not less well-built. In fact, she was larger and more imposing than Rachel. But she was a good example of the strange abatement of value a fine figure suffers when it has an ugly face on top. She had extraordinarily thick, ash-blonde hair, covered with a little cap and hanging in a great knot at her neck. But her green-gray eyes squinted dejectedly down her long red nose, and the lids were sore and red. Red, too, were her hands, and she tried to hide them. As indeed she hid her squint, too, by dropping her eyelids with a sort of shame-faced dignity. "There we have it," thought Jacob, as he looked at the sisters, "the pale moon and the bright." Yet he spoke to Leah and not to Rachel as they crossed the little paved court, in the center of which an altar was set up. But she only gave a deprecating little cluck, like the shepherds in the field, and seemed to be waiting for the interpreter, whose Canaanitish name she mentioned several times, a domestic called Abdcheba, the same whom they had seen baking cakes in the outer court. For when they had climbed the brick stair leading up to the roof and reached the open room where the meal was taken, he brought water for Jacob's feet and hands and announced that he was born in a village belonging to the lords of Jerusalem. Because of his parents' poverty, he had been sold into slavery for the fixed price of 20 shekels, a sum which apparently conditioned the modest opinion he had of himself, and since then had many times changed hands. He was short, gray-haired, and hollow-chested, but he had a ready tongue. Whatever Jacob uttered, he at once translated into the native idiom, and returned the answer with equal fluency. It was a long, narrow room in which they sat down, a pleasant, airy one. Between the pillars that supported the roof, one looked out on one side over the darkening fields, on the other into the peaceful quadrangle of the inner court, which was hung with colored awnings and had a pebbled pavement and a wooden gallery running round it. Evening was coming on. The maid in the loincloth apron, who had brought the water, now fetched fire from the hearth and lighted 3 earthenware lamps that stood upon tripods. Then she and Abdcheba brought in the meal. A pot of thick porridge prepared with oil of sesame. "Papa Sue! Papa Sue!" shouted Rachel in childish glee, licking her lips comically and clapping her hands. Warm cakes of barley flour, radishes, cucumbers, sprouts of the cabbage palm, and for beverages, goat's milk and water from the canal, a supply of which hung in a great earthenware amphora on one of the pillars. There were also 2 large earthenware chests on the outer wall of the room, full of various copper basins, milk vessels, goblets, and a handmill. The family sat or perched irregularly about the low leather-covered dais which served as a table. Laban and his wife reclined side by side on a couch. The daughters sat with their legs curled under them on bundles of reed with cushions atop, and Jacob had a backless chair of gaily painted earthenware, with a footstool to match. There were 2 cow's horn spoons for the papa sou, which were used in turn, each person, after using, filling his spoon from the dish and passing it on to the next. Jacob sat next to Rachel and filled the spoon so full each time for her that it made her laugh. Leah saw it, and her squint became positively painful. Little was said during the meal, and that little had reference to the food. Adina would say to Laban, "Eat, my husband, all is thine." Or to Jacob, "Come, stranger, refresh thy weariness with food." Or one of the parents would say to one of the daughters, "I see thou takest all for thyself and leavest the others naught. Bridle thy greediness, else the witch Labartu will turn thy inwards over and make thee to vomit." Even such trifles as these, Abdcheba failed not to translate for Jacob's benefit, and the latter began to take his share in the conversation, saying to Laban in the strange tongue, "Eat, father and brother, all is thine." Or to Rachel, "Come, sister, eat, and rejoice thy heart." Abdcheba and the maid in the apron ate at the same time as the others, interrupting their meal to serve, suddenly squatting down to munch a radish or to take turns in drinking goat's milk out of a bowl. The maid, whose name was Iltani, kept brushing the crumbs from her hanging breasts with the tips of her fingers. When the meal was finished, Laban called for liquor for himself and the guest. Abtsheba dragged up a skin of beer made from fermented grain, and two beakers were filled, with straws to drink from, as there were many wheat kernels floating on top. The women retired, after Laban had perfunctorily laid his hand upon the head of each. They took leave of Jacob for the night, and as Rachel did so, Jacob gazed once more into the friendly darkness of her eyes, and saw the whiteness of her teeth, with the spaces between, as she said, laughing, "Much, much, Papa Sue! Spoon full up! Abraham, forefather, thine, mine," he answered, as in explanation, repeating the gesture of laying one forefinger across the tip of the other. They nodded again as they had in the field. While the mother's face wore its bitter smile, Leah looked down her nose, and the father blinked with his usual wry and gloomy expression. Then uncle and nephew were alone in the airy upper room. Only Abtsheba squatted beside them on the floor, puffing from his exertions during the meal, and kept his eyes fixed on the lips of each in turn.